You may have a seat. So last week, we introduced this idea of Sabbath, and we are going to continue in a series on Sabbath for the next 6 weeks. So how we talked about it last week was the Lord's Day, that the first day of the week became known by early followers of Jesus as the Lord's Day because he rose from the dead on the Lord's Day. And then over time, it kind of merged with this idea of a Sabbath day, which was usually the seventh day of the week. But as that's how the people of Israel, the Jewish people, observed it. That's how it's given in the Old Testament. But as more Gentiles came in, there was a way in which they re-envisioned it and thought of it as part of the first day of the week. And since that time, there's some that would say, like, okay, this is when we observe the Sabbath, but others would say, like, well, it looks different now. We don't observe the Sabbath like they did back then in the Old Testament time. So we're going to just kind of look at all of that. Before I keep going on and on about Sabbath, I probably should, like, read it, because it's not the most well-known of commandments, but it is one of the Ten Commandments. So I'll read it now. Exodus chapter 8, or 20, verse 8 says, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy." If there's a list of commandments that are all approximately the same length or just one line, this is how much of it we would get. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. But as it's given in the Bible, it's actually got way more to it. It's the longest commandment. It gets the most space. So it goes on to say, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. So, gives a fuller description. We're supposed to keep the Sabbath day holy, and how we do that is we work 6 days a week, but also we take a break from working on one day a week so that we can Sabbath to the Lord. And what I'd like to suggest over these next weeks is not so much that we are really going to try to say, like, this is exactly what the Sabbath is and what you've got to do and all of that. I would rather say that there are some aspects of Sabbath and what it would mean to keep the Sabbath that we would be wise to incorporate into our lives. And if people can figure out how to make a day of it, that would be the best, probably. But I wouldn't want to prevent people from thinking they can enter into some sort of Sabbath reality because they know they can't do a day. This sermon series is like years and years in the making, because the reality is I can never figure out how to do Sabbath for myself. And so I feel guilty about it. When I did do Sabbath, I'd feel guilty about it, like, because, you know, I'm not doing anything. Either way, I'm feeling guilty, which is probably the opposite of what God has in mind with it. But since I took a sabbatical and I came back at the beginning of November, I have pretty much, maybe with one exception, kept a Sabbath day. And it has been the most life-giving, it's the most life-giving thing going on for me right now. And I'm pretty sure I'm getting just as much or more done than I used to. So there is that, but that's not where I started. I had to, like, get a sense of what it is and experiment and try things. And I'm not fully keeping everything about it. I'm not even sure if that's possible, all these different aspects that I'm about to mention. But there's a lot of it that's in my life right now. So let me give you some of the aspects of what Sabbath, in the full sense of its word, would include. And this is pretty similar, if you were here last week, to what I did, but I tweaked it just a little bit to match where we're going with some sermons coming up. So the first thing would be to stop and to rest. To stop and rest. Take a break from getting stuff done. Take a break from getting stuff, period. You know, from accomplishing and accumulating. Take a break from that. So that you can enter rest. And part of what rest looks like is certainly what it sounds like, slowing down a little bit, not being in a hurry, not, maybe silence might be a little extreme, but quiet, just a quieter sense of things, sleeping in or taking naps. That is Sabbath. I mean, when you're a kid, that's like, no! And then the rest of your life, you're like, please! So, and then a solitude might be part of it, just some space where it just can be you and God, kind of thing. I joked last week about, like, another S. If you're married, you might want to do another S. And Somebody was telling me this week that he's like, does my wife call you on Saturdays? Because just occasionally what happens is, like, we're talking about something, and then you end up talking about the exact same thing the next day, and it really ends to be in favor on her side. And so what happened this particular week was that he was doing yard work and stuff like that on Saturday and didn't quite get it all done, but, you know, just wrapped up. He said, I'll just do it tomorrow afternoon. He's like, well, it's Easter Sunday. He's like, it's just an hour or two it'd take me. I'll just do it tomorrow afternoon, finish up tomorrow afternoon. He's like, but it's Easter. And so he didn't do it eventually. And then he gets here, and I'm talking about Sabbath and not working. And so then he said, so, I mean, I just let it go. I mean, it's, you know, might not look good now. The yard might not look good, but I just entered into that other S you were talking about and put on my sweatpants. And he's like, I don't know why Camille would feel uncomfortable about you talking about sweatpants. You could have just said the word, but. So what I like about that is, like, actually, now that is Sabbath. That could be another S. I think sweatpants, you're getting the right idea. Sweatpants and Sabbath go together. So that's one set of aspects. But there could be a sense when you start, like, okay, slow, silence, stillness, sleep, boring. So we just sit around and do nothing. Well, I think it would be good to incorporate some of this into our life. But that's not the fullness of Sabbath. There's other things to it. So, worship and delight. The Lord's Day, Christians might not agree on whether or not that is the Sabbath now or that you do the fullness of as it's listed in the commandment now, but they have pretty much said, like, there is probably to be a day that we organize our lives around and we come together and worship. Now, that maybe that doesn't work for some people because of their jobs and things like that, but there's other aspects of worship that we could still incorporate that would get into the Sabbath thing. So we can worship in song by ourselves too, or with others. It doesn't have to be in this place. We can be in scripture. We can pray. Those are different aspects of Sabbath that would happen here, but they don't have to happen here. And then the other thing I would say is that it's a celebration of creation. That's how the Jewish people thought of the Sabbath. That's one of the main things they would think. It's a celebration of God, what God has created. And so getting outside is good Sabbath, good like Sabbath keeping, like getting in touch with what God's created, enjoying what he has made. That would be a good part of being keeping Sabbath. And then last little section would be celebrate and remember. So food in Jesus' name. Last year we did some sermons on food in Jesus' name. So it's like eating together at a table, unhurried way, just enjoying each other. And, you know, you pray or you be thankful for each other for something. There's some aspect that it's just that you include God in it, but mostly it's just eating and enjoying together. And that is a big part of what Sabbath keeping has looked like for the Jewish people. Their Sabbath started on Friday night with a meal, light a candle and two candles, actually, and do a meal. And then lastly, just it's to remember God's provision and God's saving power. So there is in the New Testament a few verses that would talk about, that I would say, or make it pretty clear that we don't have to figure out, so is Sabbath supposed to be the seventh day or the first day? Does it have to be one of those days? Does it have to be the same day a week? There's some verses that just say, like, you know, we're not getting that. There's flexibility now that Jesus has come. And some would say that those verses would suggest that keeping Sabbath is like other things in the law that we just don't have to do anymore. So, like, dietary laws that are in the Old Testament, that in the New Testament we see, like, no, now we are able to eat pork. Kind of thing. Or sacrificial system. No, Jesus is the once and all sacrifice. We don't have to keep doing the sacrificial thing. Or circumcision. These are things that later in the Bible, after Jesus came, they say, no, these were pointing to a time, getting a people ready, set apart. But when Jesus came, they fulfilled, and now we don't have to do those things. And they say, well, Sabbath keeping is like that. So part of what I want to do today and next week is not so much here's the practical of what Sabbath looks like. It's more of like, so what's the purpose of Sabbath? Because besides if God told us to do it, we should do it, there might be like, and actually there's some good reasons to do it. That's what I would like to think about. And so this week we're going to look at a passage in Mark. Next week we'll look in Luke. The following week we'll look at Matthew, because the context around him is a little different. But it's where Jesus calls himself the Lord of the Sabbath. So Mark chapter 2, verse 27 said, "Then Jesus said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.'" So what often happens in the New Testament is there is fights between religious leaders and Jesus about the Sabbath. And Jesus' response in these fights is really an emphasis on the Sabbath was made, or that man wasn't made for the Sabbath. Like, we don't exist to make sure we keep all the rules for the Sabbath so that the Sabbath is, that's not it. And if we were part of a community that was very much like, you better keep the Sabbath, and we're all going to make sure you keep the Sabbath, and we're going to, and you better not do this, and you shouldn't do that, and if you do it, we're going to be on you, then we would want to emphasize that part of what Jesus was saying, just like he did back then, because that's who he was around. But that's not us. I mean, I don't know a lot of people who are being like, that's Sabbath, you keep the Sabbath. I mean, mostly it's like, what is the Sabbath? I don't even do the Sabbath. I don't know. Not even trying to do a Sabbath. I don't even know what the Sabbath is. So then it might be good to pay attention to the fact that Jesus said that the Sabbath was made for humans. It's a gift to us. It's intended for our good. Now, when I read the commandment earlier from Exodus, I did not, even though I read, you know, the short part, then the fuller explanation that follows it, I stopped before it ended. So here's what it says in verse 11, if I were to keep going. "For in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So it starts to describe, okay, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Here's what it is. You know, 6 days you work, but the seventh day you don't work. It's a Sabbath to the Lord, and so you don't work, and other people don't work. And then it says now, because this goes back to creation. This goes back and think about this from creation. And so for people who say, like, well, the Sabbath is just part of the law. It was just for the people of Israel. It's part of their law. It's part of their ceremony. It's part of their identity. It's just for them then. And now that Jesus has come, it doesn't apply to us anymore. Well, we're kind of missing that actually when it's described and when God speaks it and says, this is what you should do, he says, because this has been around since I created human beings. Like, this is like how I created life to work. So it's way before the law. It's before any other things about any of the other commandments is ever mentioned in the Bible. We're already talking about this idea of a Sabbath. So for the rest of today, we're going to look at that beginning account in Genesis about, like, so how does this all fit together? Genesis 1, verse 1 says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." Verse 2, "Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." In reading this, what I'm about to read, I want to point something out, and that is that page 1 of Genesis, I'll call it page 1, chapter 1, they put the chapter 2 in an unfortunate spot because everyone is clear, you know, this was put together before someone went in and threw the numbers in there, that it really, this section goes through chapter 2, verse 4. But it is a poem in Hebrew. It is a Hebrew poem, very sophisticated poem. And so there are patterns and rhythms to it. Hebrew poetry doesn't usually rhyme. It does word plays. It does patterns. It does repeated words. And so I'm going to read, this has like repeated words, and I'm going to read the first paragraph, and there's a pattern to it, a rhythm to it that continues in most ways, but then in some ways it changes up. And so when you're reading it, especially if you're hearing it in Hebrew and you're hearing these words repeated again and again in the phrase, you're expecting like this is going to happen, and instead like, oh, they said that differently. That must mean something. It's part of the way that they communicated meaning. Anyway, let me read this first paragraph. "And God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day." Now, if we would go on to read the rest of the days, there would be a lot of things that, okay, and God said, let there, and God said, let there, and God said, and then there would be, and God saw that it was good, and God saw that it was good each of these days. And there was evening and morning the first day, and then the next one, there's evening and morning the second day, and so on. So there's these patterns in it. Now, there's other kinds of patterns, too. And in English, we can get some of those. So we can get these repeated words. In English, we might also be able to see that in day one, there was a separation that happened. In day one, the separation was between light and darkness. In day two, there was a separation happened. It was between water and sky. In day three, there was a separation that was between water and land. God separated the water from the land. There's brought some order to it. And there's vegetation, things happen. But then when you go to day four, there is like a filling that happens. Day four is, okay, it was light is called day, darkness is called night, and now we're going to fill night and day with things that God made, sun, moon, stars. And then day five, you know, he just separated the water and the sky. Now we're going to fill the water with fish. He's going to make fish to fill the water. He's going to make birds to fill the sky. And then you get to day six, and he makes things to go along the dry ground, all these animals and creatures and humans too. And so there's this pattern. Day one, two, three is separate that way. Day three, four, five, six. And you can see how they pair up. They match. Okay, it's a pattern. Then you get to day seven. Now, day seven doesn't have a partner. Day seven doesn't have it. And I should say before this, in the repeated things, there's this pattern until you get to the making of human beings. Human beings, there's a conversation first. Okay, in heaven, like in the heavenly council. Okay, well now let's make humans. And we're going to make humans in our image. And then he speaks to the human. You're going to rule over the land. You're going to get to care for all of this stuff. Like there's clearly difference. Like humans are at a different level. And the patterns, the rhythms of how you're hearing the story, you recognize like, whoa, there's something way different going on with humans. But then there's just one more day that doesn't match the three, that is building on it. That's like even getting to another level in this poem. So let's wrap up. The day six went, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. One of the differences. And there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. Thus the heavens and earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So three times, seventh day, seventh day, seventh day. But he makes something on the seventh day. He makes a day holy, a day different, a day having a different reality than any other days. Now, there are other kinds of patterns. There's actually multiple patterns overlaid. I don't know this. This is what the people who study the rabbis who study the Hebrew say. But there's multiple patterns overlaid. And so part of Hebrew poetry, they have what's called chiasms, where they repeat things that the same or similar multiple times as they're going through a story. And they might do that like point A, point B, point C, point D, and then when they go on, they say something that sounds exactly like point A again, and point B again, and point C again, and point D again. It's not always completely obvious if you aren't looking for it, but it's there. But they also have inverted chiasms. So here's a picture of the pattern of an inverted chiasm. Like they would say a point A, then they would say a point B, then they would say a point C, and then they would say a point D, and then they would say something that in some way matches up what they had just said in point C, and then the next thing they say, actually, if you look, it matches what they said in point B, and there's like bookends, it's a little pattern, and when there's inverted chiasms, the middle is what matters. The middle is what matters. Now, the Bible is introducing that these patterns are going to be a way in which they communicate what's important from the very beginning. The first sentence in the Bible, in the beginning, as God's created the heavens and the earth, in Hebrew is seven words. And there's going to be a repeat of seven, like the second sentence is 14 words, seven times two. God is mentioned 35 times, seven times five. And you think like, well, you're kind of stretching it. Until you see just how many sevens there are, you're like, oh no. And God saw that it was seven times. I mean, there's a lot of sevens, and it's going to keep going on through Exodus and beyond. So, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The middle word is just two letters, which we don't even translate. We use word order to do what this word is communicating. It's just two letters, but it's the first letter in Hebrew, and it's the last letter in Hebrew. So it's like the beginning and the end, like in Revelation it says the Alpha and Omega, that's Greek, the first word of the alphabet and the last word of the alphabet in Greek. And Jesus says, I am the beginning and the end. And so there is something about, he is talking about an A to Z thing, a completeness, something is going on in his creation at the beginning, and it's putting it right there. And so the pattern is there right away. Seven, and in the middle is important. Now, there are 7 days that is talked about in this first page of Genesis. And so when I think of what happens in the 7 days, what I'm thinking about is like, this is when material stuff came into being, right? This is where the material world was made, where what we see and what we touch and what we, you know, the animals, the plants, it's all, this is when it was all made. It's all about the material world coming into existence and God creating it. But if you pay attention to the inverted chiasm, the most important parts are usually the bookends, the first thing and the last thing, and then the most important part, the treasure, they might call it, is hidden in the middle of different chiasms. The treasure is usually hidden in the middle. That is the main point, or something really important that you're supposed to pay attention to. So when you look at the 4 days, day one is about time. It's not about like so much about like the material universe. It's like he called it day, and he called it night. It's a time thing. You get to day 4, talks about these things, but it talks about to mark the seasons. It's also about time. And then you get to day 7, and all the material world is done, but he's making something else. He's making the Sabbath. He's making a different kind of time. And so there's something really important about time, and there's a different kind of reality to that time. Now, if you were to take the chapter as a whole and invert it, where you would start is that the earth was formless and void and empty, and there was nothing. There was nothing there. And then when you get to the very end, you say, okay, and God, at the last day, he did nothing. He rested. There's nothing and nothing. If you count all the letters of the first page of the Bible, or words, I mean, and you go, and they do this kind of stuff. I mean, this is not how I read the Bible, but this is, and you take the middle word, so you count them all and say, okay, what word is the exact middle of the first page? It's a word that we translate, or translate at least in the NIV, as sacred time. What's the treasure in the middle? What's the point that they're saying we don't want you to miss? It has to do with sacred time. And why am I saying all this stuff? Because the idea of Sabbath is not just like, oh, it's just this little thing that they had. It is like the very first chapter is intricately written to emphasize it. Other creation accounts from, you know, the other peoples and their fables, it's all about material time. They didn't talk about time. But there is an emphasis on the sacred time to the fact where you get to the end of it and it's like culminating in just this Sabbath day. It's very strange, but it means something. And if we go back to the rhythms of, and there was evening and there was morning on the first day, and there was evening and there was morning on the second day. So for Hebrew people, the day starts in the evening when the sun goes down. When the sun goes down and there's no electricity, you're getting close to bedtime. Their day starts with going to bed. For us, we talk about morning to night, because the day starts when we do. The day starts when I get going. That's when the day starts. But that's not how God set it up. He set it up like he's already, he will put it all into place. Think about the world. By the time humans got created, all this stuff is already there. All this stuff is already there. And then they're made. And then, you know, they're created. Go to bed. Wake up for your first day, and it's day 7. What are we doing, God? Resting. just enjoying all this, just taking delight and look at that and that, and just, you know, no stress. We're just here. We are. We're just gonna sit in it, lean back. Here, join me in this. Now that goes against how we think life works. We think life works like it's all about what we do and what do we get done and what do we have to do and what do we have. And the Sabbath is like different than all of that. And by the way, the seventh day, another thing that's different about it is that unlike the rest of the days, it never says, and there was evening and there was morning on the seventh day. It's as if there is a reality that exists that we could tap into right now that just goes on forever. Okay, at the risk of going a little overboard. So this thing with sevens, it just keeps going. When the people leave slavery in Egypt, there's like seven different things, stories, until they get to the foot of Mount Sinai. And then Moses goes up and down the mountain like seven times. Not like, he does it seven times. And then they get the commands, they all agree he's going to be their God, and then he waits 6 days, and then on the seventh day, he gets to go up, and then God shows up. And then God starts to, in chapters 25 through 31, give the blueprints for the tabernacle that he wants to build, the place where his presence is going to come and dwell. And he speaks seven times when he's giving the blueprints, one time, two times, three. When he gets to the seventh time he speaks, it is to remember to keep the Sabbath. Then Moses goes down, there's the golden calf thing, there's the interceding for them thing, and it's going to start all over. Moses goes back up. They, once again, and this is a really boring part of Exodus, it starts with a story about the Sabbath, and then there they go again, the seven things about building the tabernacle, and then God comes down, and cloud of glory comes when the tabernacle's done, and just rests on the tabernacle. Like his power, his glory, his presence is just there, resting there. Now, we can think about God's presence coming into a space like that, like a tabernacle, a temple, a place of prayer. We just sense his presence in this place, in this space. But what the Jewish rabbis say is that Sabbath is like that in the dimension of time. It is where we enter into God's tangible presence in time. It is, they say, the cathedral of time. That's what Sabbath is, getting into Sabbath. Now, again, we might not all, especially right away, be able to figure out like the day and how to make the day, but can we create a Sabbath reality, sacred time that's different than how we do other kinds of time? We just would do this time differently than we do normal time. And some of those aspects that I mentioned are just different ways that we could say, okay, what if we took some of these ingredients for an afternoon once a week, or an afternoon once, or an evening, or, you know, or maybe there's multiple ways that I enter into Sabbath time. Again, I think there's wisdom to trying to figure out how to create a rhythm to it in the week, but just knowing that there's like a dimension where God's presence, where his filling, where his delight and enjoyment is experienced, like how do we enter into some of that? If you're doing the small groups, that would be what you could do. You could explore those different ways. You could explore like what would it be like to try some things out. We're only meeting 4 or 5 weeks. Four times, really. If my group, I'm going to say one of the times, let's go to Upper Room, because Upper Room is one of the places where I feel like I experience this Sabbath filling so many times on those Wednesday nights. But just entering into time in a different way than normal. Here's the last word, and I'm going to have three sub-points of building off of this word, enough. Enough. Thinking about Sabbath and thinking about enough. How maybe part of what is being communicated in Genesis 1 is that God's enough. That he has made enough. That we can enter in. So one of the ways that we would do enough, one of the aspects of this is I don't need to do more or buy more or view more right now. Like, there will be more to do. 6 days you work, there'll be more to buy. There's times to watch things and explore things and search things. But I don't need to. But there is also a time that's going to be different. It's sacred time, and I don't need to do. For a little bit, I set those things aside. I say it's enough. I've got an iPhone, and when you turn on the iPhone, what comes up is the apple with the bite out of it. And A.J. Swoboda, who wrote an award-winning book on the Sabbath, it's not in the book, but I heard him speak, and he mentioned it. He said, you know, it's like there's a reminder that we're about to be eating from the wrong tree. And what he means by that is in Genesis 3, of course, you know, God has made, he's like made all this stuff, trees, food, everything. It's just live it up here. It's all for you, but it's all enough, so you don't need this one tree. Because I've made enough all over. You don't need this one tree. But they think, yeah, but that tree, the fruit of that tree, and the evil kind of whispers, like, that's God holding back on you. That's the best part. That's the, you know, you could be like God. And what these tend to do, you know, God is omnipotent. He's all-powerful. He's omnipresent. He's everywhere at any time. He's omniscient. He knows all things. And what these do is like, oh, I can be anywhere. I can communicate anywhere. I can know what's going on anywhere in the world. I can know everything. I can Google anything. I can know. It's like now I can be like God. But the problem is that I can't be God. God is God. I'm a created human being with limits. And I actually had to say, like, this is a newer phone. How do you turn this? I wanted to make sure that the Apple thing still was the thing before I made the example, because I didn't want to show my ignorance, so I was asking them back in the booth. And they're like, oh, well, so that's new phone. I'm like, yeah, well, I guess I've had it for like 8 months. But evidently, I've never turned it off. And that's just, maybe there's a whole little parable in me, or for me in that, but, you know, screens, watching something, watching sports, watching or viewing or YouTube videos, whatever we're doing. Like, it gives the illusion of the Sabbath experience we're longing for. Ah, rest. Ah, I can just take it in. But it leaves me empty. Unlike Sabbath. So I'm not saying you can't ever do any of that, or any of that would be not part of Sabbath. But I'm saying that we tend to go all the way to this, and then really we're starting to address, like, oh, first commandment and second commandment we might have some issues with if we want to keep the Sabbath. The Sabbath is something different. It is setting aside some things to enjoy that God has given us enough. That's the next one. God is and has enough for me in my life. And then this last one, I want to exchange my never enough for God's always enough. I don't know about you, but it is easy to feel like, I just did that and that and that, and it's still not enough. I just try hard here, and it's still not enough. I did that, and I'm not enough. It's not enough. Oh, I mean, I just got all these things, but those things that I thought, if I just had those things, now I have those things, but it's still not enough because I need this thing. And just there's this part of me that is like, it's never enough, it's never enough, and it starts to feel like I'm never enough for life. And the reality is, God is enough. Like, he's given us enough. He's already doing things. He's already providing things. We're asleep at night, and he's like, I got it. Here, why don't your day start? Why don't you go sleep? I'll watch over the world. Why don't you create certain sacred times where instead of feeling like you have to do things or you have to get things or you have to see things, just enjoy what I gave you already. Just enjoy life. I've already done it. Now, we live in a cursed world. We live in a world where things aren't working, but like that's the picture though. Like, remember, the Sabbath day, there was no evening and morning because it's a reality that's going, like, eventually we'll enter into it. In Hebrews, it says, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. It's still available to us. There is an eternal quality. It's not like, oh, great, in heaven, so we'll do nothing. No, but we won't do it with the stress. It'll be like God's with us and we're doing it and it's enjoyable. He has already put things together in place. And he is enough for what needs to happen moving forward in the future. So I'll have the worship team come out. We're going to do a closing song. And we're going to pray. I found a book. Or maybe Camille. No, Camille found the book. Down at a Franciscan retreat center on prayer. And I was reading it. Sitting in a sanctuary, like with the stained glass kind of sanctuary, very sacred, you know, very beautiful and quiet. And I'm reading this book, and it talks about two kinds of prayers. And the second kind of prayer is, I think he was calling it contemplative prayer, but he said the whole goal of it is to hear God say, I love you. Like, just to have that, like, kind of come into your mind, into your being. I love you. And that's Sabbath. Like, I love you. It's not because of what you did or didn't do. It's not because of what you have or don't have. It's just, I love you. And you can trust me. I've got lots of good gifts I've given, but I got lots more I'm going to give. It'll be enough. I will be enough for you. So remember, remind yourself, enter some time so that that reality can be part of your lifestyle and be woven into your being, not just something that, like, oh yeah, I know that in my head, but you don't really experience it in life. I love you. I'm enough. I'm going to be enough. You're going to have enough. Let's pray. God, I pray for your enoughness to fill the room right now. That where we don't feel like enough, or that we have enough, or that there's too much to do, and so there's not enough to do it. You just replace that right now with your enoughness. You are enough. You are enough. You may want to tell yourself that. God, you are enough for me. You have enough for me. You will provide enough for me. Pray what I prayed before we started the message. God, would you fill us? Fill us, and at the same time, would we leave lighter than we came in, less burdened? Fill us during the song, and I pray that you would heal in Jesus' name things that need to be healed during this song as well. Heal in Jesus' name.